Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Welcome back. The Beatles' iconic album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, celebrated its 50th anniversary in 2017. Acclaimed dancer and choreographer Mark Morris pays tribute to the sights and the sounds of 1960s mods, music, and color with a vibrant show called Pepperland from the Mark Morris Dance Group at BAM. Let's listen to some of the music from the show arranged by Ethan Iverson. Pepperland, which premiered at Liverpool's Sgt. Pepper at 50s Festival in 2017, is now running at BAM through May 11th. Mark, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
What is it about the sound, the ethos of Sgt. Pepper that you think still is relevant today?
I think that anything that's any good at any time is relevant at every time. So, significantly, I only work with live music. I use no recorded music, only living musicians, which I prefer. And of course, that album, Sgt. Pepper, was a studio album. It was one of the very first ones to not be meant to be performed. So I was asked to do this piece, and I didn't want to do a feel-good, nostalgia, memory lane kind of thing. So I looked back at the album, listened to it very closely. I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it at first because I don't listen to the Beatles all the time. I don't have a shrine to the Beatles in my apartment. And I asked Ethan Iverson, the great, fabulous jazz pianist, composer, and writer, if he would consider doing it. So it's a completely revisited approach that comes from all of the information and all the research and all the listening of this album, but orchestrated the instrumentation is completely different. It's a seven-piece band. Mm-hmm. It's the music you heard is from a piece called The Scherzo, which is interleaved with his treatments of actual cuts from the album. So, and we can't play those on the radio.
Right.
So, for various reasons, like the rights, which were incredibly complicated to secure in order to perform this, because I'm not going to work on something and not be able to do it. I'm just practical that way. So it's a really, really interesting, fabulous rethinking of the music, but based on the same influences that they had, North Indian music, Stockhausen, mm-hmm. Vaudeville, music hall music, sort of sentimental stuff, but processed through their sort of in their 20s imaginations with all the time and money in the world in a studio. So we didn't have that. We had another thing, which was wonderful, fabulous musicians and dancers and new ideas to do this with.
I have to ask a tangential question. Mm-hmm. Why only live music? What is it about it for you? Why is that the only way you work?
This is the sound of me storming out of the studio and slamming the door. Right? No, I need a Foley artist or something. Anyway, it's better.
Just better.
It's way better. Yeah, I always liken it to karaoke night at the opera. Like, you wouldn't want to have the orchestra canned and the singers live or vice versa.
Yes.
And so, but in dance, particularly in modern dance, contemporary dance, whatever you want to call it, not the ballet industry is what I'm talking about. We're so accustomed to dancing to recorded music. People go to shows expecting that, and I don't want to. That's why I have, headphones if I need to hear the music that I already love and know. And everybody has so much access to everything that it's become unusual to have living people. I want live dancers, live musicians, live audience. All of those at the same time is a wonderful kind of syzygy.
I love that about a lot of sort of the more experimental Broadway shows are, putting the bands on the stage.
Yeah.
And it really, I think Hadestown does that,
right?
And the new Oklahoma.
Yeah. Instead of in a room a block away playing
right
over monitors, which is very common and I think lamentable.
My guest is Mark Morris. We're talking about Pepperland, which is at BAM from May 8th through the 11th. You know, it's the Beatles, it can be thorny, it can be tricky because you can go down the karaoke road very mm-hmm. easy. Not you, one can go down the karaoke road.
Oh, I'm expert at karaoke also, but you don't need to hear that.
What were you cautious about as you approached this so that you didn't fall into some of those traps?
Mm-hmm. Well, I may have. I don't know. I mean, I'm unscathed, so I, you know, it wasn't too dangerous. But, well, first of all, I was asked by an old friend of mine who I refer to as a festivalist. He curates festivals. He's excellent at mm-hmm. it. And I got a call sort of from nowhere from him. And Sean Doran is his name. And he asked me if I would be interested in doing this for Liverpool. They were, the festival was asking artists of different media and points of view to make treatments of different songs from the album. So I thought, first of all, like, I'm an American, I'm old, I'm a choreographer, what have I to say about this, which is of course plenty. And so I, you know, my first hesitancy was cured by talking with Ethan and listening to the music again, because anybody could. I said, why don't you just do a follow the bouncing ball and invite everyone who's 64 to come and drink beer and sing along and cry about their misspent youth, which you can do. I've done that. But I didn't want this sort of memory lane thing because I don't feel that way. I'm not, you know, I'm not nostalgic, really. I'm old, but I'm not automatically nostalgic. So I was very careful in the songs that Ethan and I chose and also the treatments of the interstitial music that he's composed to not just, you know, cry about it and not dress up like bad hippie costumes. And, you know, so it's set specifically mod looking. It's clean Carnaby Street, beautiful colors. The costume designer, Liz Kurtzman, and the lighting designer, Nick Cohn, who collaborated on this with the dancers who I, of course, a lot of them, I mean, they've heard of the Beatles, but they're not sure how many of them there were or all their songs, because why would you? You know, if you're like in your 20s, it's not that big a deal. So your parents might weep, but you won't. So I started by playing the music for them, and I started choreographing it from the album because Ethan was just starting to work on the music. So I rooted it in colloquial dance from the period and from every period, more recently and back to the Charleston and the Cakewalk. So it has to do with vernacular dance and vernacular music and the feelings that evoke. And of course, they're all songs. They're lyrics to everything. And we, on purpose, Ethan and I, replaced some of the songs with instrumentals. So the people who know the music can fill in the text in their heads, and other people won't. So, also, strangely and fabulously, there's in the band, along with soprano sax, trombone, keyboards, drums, and a baritone vocalist, there's the fabulous electronic instrument, the theremin.
The theremin,
and
yeah.
So, which sounds like a kind of voice. It's very vocal sounding. So you think you're hearing things that you're not necessarily. At least that's me. It's a little haunted, housey. You
it's
know
also
I'm
got
saying.
A very 60s, lost in space. I mean, it kind of immediately puts you, if you're of a certain age, puts you in a time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the Beatles were experimenting with different sounds at that time, including, you know, electric instruments and, you know, altering the speed and of the voices and the reverb. It was very much studio. And so to do that with all living musicians was a particular feat that I think we solved quite well.
Were there certain songs you knew you wanted, or at least sounds of certain songs?
Oh, yes. It doesn't mean they're in there.
Certain ones you got?
Yeah. No, well, that's the thing. You know, it's like, you know, if you listen to it, the whole album is only 40 minutes and change. And so I knew I wanted it to be longer. My show's a little over an hour. Mm-hmm. And a few songs, if you listen to it, which you should, it's wonderful to hear. It's shorter than you remember. That there are a couple that are along the same lines. Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite has this sort of vaudeville, you know, mm-hmm. carousel sound, and so does When I'm 64. I never wanted to do When I'm 64, but Ethan came up with something so genius with that. He convinced me. I wanted to do Mr. Kite and She's Leaving Home, this tearjerker of a fabulous sort of proto-feminist song, really. But, you know, we fought gently over this. And I think Liverpool thought I was just going to do one number, but I ended up using six oops, my mistake. But
you seem so upset about
it. Yeah, I am. It was like, oh, I accidentally like over choreographed. Yeah. I think that it prevents it from just turning maudlin and pathetic. It's mm-hmm. really interesting and really varied. And of course, as usual, I need to mention it because I have to mention it all the time because it's true. My dancers are unbelievable and great and versatile and smart, and they save each other's asses all the time in, you know, because they work together all the time. So it's really, we just finished a tour of 7 weeks, which is a very long time to be on the road, of the UK. We started in London, and then a month and a half later, we finished in Dublin. So we did just this show, Pepperland, right, pretty much every night, not every night, but twice in each city, and then we'd travel. And so we really did it a lot, and I was afraid it was going to make it frayed, not afraid, frayed at the edges a little bit. And it's not true, of course. Every show was wonderful. And so after a couple days off, we're back doing it full force right now. So it's really, it's very satisfying to be able to do something over time and have it gel.
My guest is Mark Morris. The name of his piece is Pepperland. It is at BAM through the 11th of May. Was there a different vibe when you performed in Liverpool?
Well, yes. Different. Well, first of all, it was the first vibe.
First vibe.
Because it was commissioned by them, and we opened the festival with that. And I thought, well, this is dangerous. They may have me walk the plank for the reasons I said, an American old whatever choreographer. I'm not that old, but I'm older than I used to be.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, I hope.
Better than the alternative, Mark.
Yeah, well, there's that. I was very concerned because Liverpudlians are either related to or experts on or went to school with a Beatle. You name one, it's like, oh, of course, I knew his cousin or something, you know. So everybody's an expert, as they should be. It's a tough town. It's famously sort of a tough town. And we were in this wonderful theater that was sort of a casino. You know, it had, you could drink during the show, which is fabulous. That's another good thing about Broadway lately. You can have a drink, which makes every show better. There was some sort of, I think they were teenagers. They sounded like teenagers upstairs. You know, the lights go down and everybody's like makes kissing sounds and stuff like that, I think. And I thought, oh boy, let's see what happens with this. And we had just finished the piece hours before because it was brand new. And so we were doing it in the theater, making adjustments with the sound and the lights, everything. And so the show starts and they're kind of rowdy and everybody starts clapping along, which is not something you always want because crowds speed up for one thing. The more people there are, the faster they get. And they start clapping. And what Ethan's treatment of When I'm 64, it's in 4-4, you know, it's in a steady pulse. But his logic, which isn't mine, is that between 6 and 4 is 5. So the piece starts in a square 4, but then the tune stays in 4 and the accompaniment changes to a 6. So it becomes tripleted. Mm-hmm. And then into a 5. And so if you're clapping along, you get lost.
Yes.
And so it turns into applause, which we love, but it's really unpredictable. So the tune's like, everybody goes, of course I can sing along with this. But then he throws in like the extra stair at the bottom of the flight of steps. So it's a trick that is thrilling and makes everyone alert and puzzled. So there are sort of approaches like that throughout the whole piece, visually and sonically. And so it makes it a very, it's quite surprising. Even if you know the music really, really well, which a lot of people do, it's a surprise all the time, still to me also. And there are moments because he's fundamentally a jazz artist where there's a certain amount of improvisation expected. And that's also true in the dance. So when you watch it and listen to it, you may not know that unless you're very familiar with a lot of jazz, which I kind of am. And the dancing, you can't tell when it's improvised or not. And I don't like to know. So it's open. You know, it's not just like the boring kind of singing in the shower kind of improvisation, which is only interesting to the shower-er. But it's always, it remains fresh automatically. Even though, of course, you try to do that with every show you do, especially when everybody's alive, that really is wonderful. So everybody's very, very alert, let's put it that way. And it shows and it sounds like it's quite wonderful.
I want to ask you about this workshop from last weekend, the physically integrated workshop. It's a masterclass led by some of your dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And it says on the website, for dancers with or without disabilities. I'm interested, you
right.
know, there's been so much discussion about inclusion in all the arts,
right.
across all the arts.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen it change in dance in terms of diversity and inclusion?
Well, let's see. There are a couple of things here. We've had for years a program at my building, Mark Morris Dance Center. That's my name, right?
It's like, and people, it's yours.
Yeah, you know, people, it's like, oh, you're Mark Morris. Oh, I thought that was just a building. It's like, okay, thank you. It's like Grant's tomb. Anyway, we have a program that's been going on for a long time called Dance for PD, which is for people with Parkinson's disease. And so we came up, dancers of mine, in collaboration with the Brooklyn Parkinson's Group, devised a curriculum of dancing and singing to music based on my choreography originally, but worked out with people who have Parkinson's. So it's not therapy, it's not study group, it's not an examination, it's a dancing and music class and community of people who are so thrilled at this. And it's been going on for nearly 20 years now. And that was sort of the beginning of this sort of outreach, which we do a lot of everywhere we go on tour. We have a big, very successful, meaning a lot of students, school in Brooklyn, in Fort Greene, right across the street from Brooklyn Academy of Music. So that's convenient for us.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we have classes for many different kinds of people. Let's just say for people,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, everybody learns at a different rate or has something that they're struggling with, you know, if it's, you know, locomotion or concentration or, you know, coordination or any of those things, which aren't necessarily diseases or disorders or dis anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're different ways of being people. And so, you know, still as far as, you know, as far as like race, economics, gender, all of these things that are everywhere all the time in everybody. It's not like these were just discovered.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of the arts, this might sound bad, but a lot of the arts to me seem like sort of like a polo club. Like if you can't afford to keep the pony, you can't enter the yeah. match, the contest. I don't know what it's called because I yeah. was never invited to play polo. But, you know, if the other thing is, you know, if you're not exposed in some way, if you don't get a chance to look at it or touch or participate in something, you don't know if you hate it or not. You automatically, I hate opera because it's all rich white people. It's like, well, A, it isn't entirely, although it skews that way, of course. But it's also, you can go for cheap if you feel like you can. You're,
yeah.
If you feel welcome, you're welcome. But that's just, you don't, you know, if I go to a, you know, in the olden days, I would go to like a lesbian bar. And I was never a lesbian, and I was uncomfortable there because I didn't belong there in a certain way. And now, you know, the private club aspect is kind of dated, which I think is great. And you can still have, you know, I can have an all-gay male friend dinner party, but that's not my life, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's a much bigger and broader one than that. And so I want everybody to be comfortable, not at the expense of excellence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's work and it's concentration, and however you approach it, whatever your state or condition or situation, it's available and possible. And it doesn't mean everybody's going to be a professional this or that. Not everybody should be, you know. There are different skills and different, everyone's equal as a citizen as far
yeah.
as I'm concerned, but not everybody's a fabulous poet, you know.
Sure. But the idea that if it's accessible, at least you'll have the opportunity to find out.
Right,
if
exactly.
If we open the doors and say, everybody in the pool.
Yeah, and it couldn't hurt.
Can't hurt. I like that. My guest has been Mark Morris. The name of the show is Pepperland. It is running at BAM through this Saturday, May 11th. Mark, thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much.
After the break, our weekly culture news check-in with our friends from Gothamist. This is All of It.